It's fundraising week at Iowa Public Radio, and your gift today keeps IPR strong as we continue to tell the stories from where they happen and bring you vital reporting on this global pandemic. Make your gift now and make a real difference at iowapublicradio.org. Thanks.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's cold outside, and furnaces and other heating methods all over Iowa are working overtime. This hour, we're going to talk about some simple and effective ways to conserve energy and warmth in your home. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to give us some guidance. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Charity. How you doing today?
I'm good. This is our first Talk of Iowa of 2021. I can't think of anybody I'd rather spend it with.
Well, thank you. You as well.
Happy New Year, Bill. So,
Happy New Year to you.
Let's talk about our cold houses. And of course, you know, with a lot of newer construction, houses are pretty tight. But with older houses, is that the first place to start thinking about where you might have leaks?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's really funny how the industry of, like, say, weatherization and tightening up homes and analyzing how homes, work during this type of, weather, like handling moisture and drafts and things like that. You know, it's neat when we have access to, like, the internet so we can, take a look at what's going on all over the world and see what's working and what isn't. So we take those instances and really try to learn and hone them down to, get the best bang for your buck, but yet keep your homes as safe as possible, because we used to just try to caulk everything up. That was, that was the kind of the mantra.
Right.
Just go out and buy a couple of cases of caulk and slap it on there. And you're, irregardless of what it did to the building or, God forbid, the air on the inside of the house. But we've also noticed that how the importance of tightening as opposed to just, say, all these magical R values, of insulation, the higher the R value, the better it's going to be. In most cases, that, if you have it leaky, it doesn't matter how much insulation you have if the air is either going through it or around it. And so it's become more of, especially in building codes, especially on new ones, is you have to really tighten things up so then you can control the size of your heating cooling system and how much insulation you really need so that you keep your utility bills, way down. So the tightening, especially on an older home, is usually where we go. I mean, a lot of it is very easy to do, but the big thing we've really learned is don't just do like we used to do, go buy a bunch of caulk and, go on and hop on YouTube and they're showing you how to insulate around doors or windows, things like that, which is good. But what's it going to do to your home when you start to tighten things up? So kind of ramp back a little bit and start writing down a list of things that are the most important. And the most important thing is the indoor air quality inside the house. And so when you start tightening, you will start changing the dynamics of, let's say, how much moisture is in your home, the pollutants that normally were, say, flying out of all these holes in your house before now are stuck. And so if people are just want to do a little bit themselves, that's fine. But if you're going to, try to step in and say, hey, I'm spending $300 a month on heating, something like that, and I want to knock it down to 50 or 60, really doing a complete deep energy retrofit is what the term is. And when you do that, you have to bring in somebody to do an energy audit and a professional that will do some diagnostic testing of everything before you get started, so that you know all these steps and when it's appropriate to do what.
Okay, so don't simple. Just haphazardly try to seal up your house.
No. And in fact, what a lot of us really would like to see first is, no matter how leaky the house is, if you don't have any bathroom fans, do that first. If nothing else, get some bathroom ventilation fans, Energy Star rated ventilation fans, and have them installed correctly, not so the moisture can get back up into your attic, that it actually goes outside and gets away from the house. get somebody competent to install those. And then we feel, okay, well, if nothing else, we've got the house a little healthier, and you maybe even paid a little bit more in energy, but at least you're getting rid of this excess moisture and some of the indoor air pollutants. But then you could start doing some of your, you know, the basic things. You know what? One of the things we really notice is, especially of houses, and I'm guilty of this, the houses we built in the 70s, we used a lot of steel doors, entry doors to the main, you know, the main entries from, say, the house and the garage. And those doggone things, the early ones, shrink like you would not believe. I mean, I've had one that it shrank so much that a big wind came up and it blew the door in on a house that, you know, they just dimensionally shrink. And so when that steel starts to shrink, it pulls away from the weather stripping, and then you get all this air coming around the doors. And we always look at the door sweeps and the thresholds at the bottom of the door, you know, and we can replace those so they get a real good tight fit, and adjust the threshold. Usually they're a wooden threshold or aluminum that have little adjustment screws that you can raise and lower the threshold underneath the door so that it comes up and mates against the weather stripping. But a lot of times we don't think about the actual door not meeting the weather stripping all the way around the door. And if that door's, say, maybe 10 years old, the weather stripping may be dried out. And so you can go to basically any hardware store and pick up new weather stripping, and the directions are simple. Pull out the old, slip in the new, and that may save you, you know, $10, $20, $30 a month in some houses, as bad as it is. Mm. That little simple step right there on an entry door. And start with the one that, if you have an attached garage, start with that one first. That door should be the best sealed door in your home, so it doesn't let moisture from your vehicles and things, especially in the winter, come into the house, or any, you know, fumes or anything like that. You want that door to fit the best. And it has to be like a solid wood door. It has to be a 20-minute rated fire door. But solid wood, or these steel doors, you know, these six-panel steel doors with foam in them. But they have to make sure that weather stripping and the threshold is sealed very, very good. Those really take the brunt, it seems like, because, you know, windows, we can seal them up around the trim work. You know, you pull the trim work off and maybe foam around your windows, pull that ratty old fiberglass out of there and put some spray foam in there that's made specifically for windows so it doesn't deform the wood in there. And put the trim back on. You know, that's, for a lot of people, that's pretty simple. But, you know, windows, we don't use the windows near as much as we open and shut doors. So, you know, the weather stripping wears out more, and especially on sliders. You know, a lot of people don't look at a sliding patio door, and think about how leaky they are. You know, you put your hand up there, or, you know, blow out a match or something and see how much air blows in and around those doggone things when the weather stripping's wore out. And it would really scare you. Because usually they're 6 feet, 6 foot wide patio doors. So you're looking at, you know, a lot of lineal footage all the way around that door where there's leakage. So look at those weather strippings and see how tight they are, because the major brands, you can order new weather stripping kits for them. And there's a lot of carpenters that specifically work on those kind of things if you don't want to handle it. A lot of those sliding doors are really bad at the bottom because people wanted to move left and right with, like, say, maybe one or two fingers. So they adjust them so that the wheels underneath are moving easy. Well, right. If they're moving easy, it's letting a ton of air in. So those are ones that when we go into an older home, maybe even 5 years old, we look down at the bottom, that weather stripping's wore out from people's shoes. Tearing it apart.
What about our attics? So, that's a place where we seem to get a lot of drafts and leakage.
You know, I did a 3-hour session on it was, I think I titled it Addicts, What Were We Thinking? And I could hardly get half of it done in 3 hours because of all the things that we do wrong in addicts. When you're building new, it's a completely different animal. It has to be completely sealed. No air can get up into the attic. But when we look at these older homes, especially, you know, the two stories that have walk out or walk up stairs going into the attic, that's a lot of times is way beyond a do-it-yourself project. But the thing you can do, if you look up in the attic of just a, let's say a normal 60s or 70s attic, and you know, you'll see jumbled up insulation all over the place. You know right away that, hey, you know, I've got a chance to really save some energy. And if it's a real older home and you have, you know, the old vermiculite insulation in the attic, just shut the door and you don't go up there until that stuff is gone. You shouldn't even try to disturb it. In fact, you shouldn't really do anything to change the dynamics of the home as far as pressure to even pull dust from the attic into your ductwork. So that's something you need a professional to do. If you look up and see this, take a picture of it, get online and see what vermiculite insulation looks like because it's full of asbestos. But what we try to do in attics is any place there's a penetration, like a wire that goes up into the attic, lights, those all should be sealed and sealed properly. I sent you a couple articles that have places to go and see how to do it correctly. There's kind of a DIY guide to sealing and insulating from Energy Star that shows how to seal properly lights and wires and things that go up into the attic. There's materials you can use, some materials you can't, because a lot of the, let's say, light fixtures or can lights, you know, in the 70s or so, aren't rated to have insulation touching them. So you have to, there's specific things you have to do. So you've got to do some good research. I think one of the biggest helps that we have in Iowa, luckily, the Iowa Economic Development Authority does projects throughout the state on new and retrofits. And if you download the Iowa Green Streets criteria, there's a ton of information and standards and sources in there. Jeff Geertz from the Iowa Economic Development Authority.
All right, Bill, we're going to have together. To take a short break, but yep. You can look for the Green Streets criteria, right. And we'll continue in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and we've been talking about how to keep our homes warm, how to conserve energy, seal up leaks in some ways, but also a little bit of a warning as well, Bill, about how maybe not to take things into your own hands. And there are some really dangerous things that people can do to their homes in the name of trying to stay warm, aren't there?
Yeah. Yeah, there are. Like I was saying right before the break, is in that criteria, there's a lot of diagrams on how to do it right, which is really nice. So it's a good source, especially it's made for Iowa. So Chapter 5 is where I always go for reference. But you know, the most common thing that we see is it kind of comes back to attics is, you know, we see somebody come in and they want to air seal their attic, and they just walk up and top, you know, let's say, and they start compressing the insulation and they don't fluff it back. And so if you ever go up in your attic, of course, always wear a mask and such, but that any insulation you disturb has to be brought back to as good or better of what it was. And so if you want to add more insulation, you have to air seal that whole ceiling first. In fact, it's law in Minnesota, and we haven't got to that point yet. But if you're going to add insulation up there, well, sometimes what will happen is you'll go out to a big sale and buy some insulation and blow it in there all yourself. And what it does if you didn't air seal is still there's air, warm air leaking from inside the house up into the attic. And since there's more insulation up there, it actually keeps the attic, changes the attic temperature a little bit. In many cases, that's the only time that you'll end up getting frost on the bottom of your roof deck, and then that melts and then waters down your insulation, and it's no good, and sometimes brings the drywall down on you. So there's a lot of little issues. That's why I say in the beginning, you really want to do some research and look at that. And plus, see where your bathroom vent fans, if you have anything, if it's going into the attic, a lot of guys will buy fans and just empty them into the attic thinking, okay, out of sight, out of mind. And all that moisture goes up in the attic and wets the insulation, and then it doesn't perform. And then people wonder why their rooms are cold, especially a bathroom. All of a sudden, it's become a lot colder. Well, they'll blame the vent. Well, it's the vent because they dumped all the moisture up there and wetted everything down, like, you know, wetting your socks inside your boots.
Well, and obviously that can create some mold problems as well.
Oh, everything, yeah.
That's another show.
Oh, boy, you betcha. Yeah, yep.
All right, I've tweeted out a link to the Iowa Green Streets criteria, but you can also just put that into a search engine and you'll get right there. And Bill, we have a number of people already on the phone with questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dave is up first in Norwalk. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Real quick, Bill, I bought a house last year. I don't like the house. It's an old house. The location is fantastic. It's got a heat pump system, and that's old. Every time we get below 35, we have problems, so we end up running emergency heat anyway. I have gas run to the house, but it's not in the house. The mechanical room is in a horrible position in the middle of the house, so everything would have to be plumbed in. And I'm at a complete loss as to how to replace this system and what to replace it with. I get frustrated and I think, I'll just put another all-electric heat pump system in. I hear they're pretty good these days. And then I hear about hybrid system, gas and electric, and I don't have a clue because I'm listening to salesmen and they're not making any sense to me. Please help.
Yeah, I like that. Well, you know, of course, now you're talking to somebody who's kind of biased, too, because I really like heat pumps. I have geothermal in mine. You know, a lot of my friends have geothermal. We really like it, and that's an option. But, you know, where you're at probably would not be the new generation of air source heat pumps. I have one in northern Minnesota right now that, you know, I can hardly tell it's even on, like during the summer when I'm cooling. The heat pumps now, the new generation of heat pumps, they're almost like computers. It seems like every month the efficiencies are better. The main brands, you know, are all getting down to that. They're operable at around 22 below. They're still putting out heat at 22 below zero.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, you know, and... It depends.
So here's my main question, are those electric?
Yeah.
Are those electric?
Yes, they are. They're electric. And that's why, you know, they're so much more efficient than, say, the old ones. And I really like electric because I just like an all-electric home. Especially down on the road, you know, when we move into more of an electric or hydrogen society, you know, it's easier to for the power usage of. Even though gas is cheap now, we don't know what's, you know, you look at all those big world things. But, the new heat pumps, and whether you have a ducted one or using mini splits, there's so many choices out there. But I really like any type of heat pump because of the technology. I like the safety aspect of it. I never have to worry about, you know, carbon monoxide, anything like that. So I would be looking at upgrading your heat pump. Yeah. And so there's some really good guys in Des Moines.
So you're good with the new electric heat pumps, because I've had a salesman tell me, no, you got to rip it all out and go hybrid, gas, electric, and blah, blah, blah. And I'd rather stay all electric, too, if I possibly could.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is my personal opinion, too. But, you know, I'm building a place way up north of Duluth, and it's all heat pumps. And the vast majority of the guys I know up there are switching their units out, going to heat pumps. And because they want to stay on electric, because their options are either propane or oil up there, because they're out there in the middle of the boonies.
Right.
And so they,
okay,
they're,
thank
they're
you
going
so
with
much.
That. They're going with that. Sure, you betcha.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Any brand or any type, or I just don't know, Bill, any kind of heat pump type that I should be looking at?
Well, the major brands. Go with, you know, the majors. And, you know, there's Fujitsu, Mitsubishi, you know, Daikin. All of those are really good. And there's some really good people in Des Moines that know how to design those systems, and you can leave your number with Charity. I can give you a call back if you want, because I know some people that are really good in your area.
All right, Dave, we will take care of that. And Bill, I think for a lot of people that technology seems really new, but this is not new technology. This is just fairly new to the United States.
You know, it is. And I just, you know, my wife Donna gets kind of frustrated with me, because every time I watch a movie, and I watch a lot of foreign movies, like all the Korean movies and British movies, you know, and European, all that stuff. And I'm always constantly, hey, there's some more mini splits. And all these buildings have heat pumps all over the place. And they've been using it for years and years and years. Yeah, the technology is just that they're becoming so efficient. Now that for a cold climate, it used to, and you're hearing all these horror stories, people say, oh, they don't work, you know, when it gets below, you know, 20 degrees. Yeah, that was the case 20 years ago, but we're, you know, computers, what kind of computers did we have 20 years ago? It's that technology is exponentially just getting better and better. I really like either geothermal or air source, and that's just, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that's what I like, and that's just the way it is.
All right. Well, Dave, good luck with that. And Jim is on the line in Spencer at 866-780-9100. You can also email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, hi.
Okay. So we came across a barn full of old shingles, brand new cedar shakes. And I bought them because it's enough to cover my roof. I have an old 125-year-old house, and so now I'm pretty much going back to the old roof. And one thing I heard was that would add some insulation. Is that true?
Not be worth your time, because the insulation would be outboard of your attic, and it really doesn't do anything for you. It you know, cedar shakes, and you know, the thing is, when you're using cedar shakes, you know, the right way to put them down is to, you know, they have to have like a breathing membrane underneath it, like cedar breather is a real good one.
That was the other thing I was going to ask you about, because,
yeah,
you know, a lot of the purists want you to tear it off and put in bats and, you know, get rid of all the sublayer. But I don't know if I want to do that. What do you think?
Yeah, upgrade, you know, go to the, I can't remember what the name of the actual cedar shingle society is or whatever. You know, they have specifics, especially with your particular, you figure out what company yours came from, and you know, they'll tell you what they want to have underneath it. But I just about guarantee you they're going to want cedar on top of something that's like, you know, a mesh, like cedar breather, which is designed specifically for it, and then on top of, you know, your new roof deck, because here in Fort Dodge, I remember a guy put the best cedar shakes and on top of this roof, and it wasn't 10 years, and they had to take them off because they didn't have any air underneath to breathe, like, you know, the old way of having individual boards underneath so it could breathe from the attic. You know, sure, they lasted good on a farmhouse, but you could also stand in the attic and look out and see the stars at night. You know, you can't do that on a brand new home. So, just go with the recommendations, but they'll pretty much require you to have some sort of a breathing mechanism underneath those cedars. And if not, you know, then I'd go to steel, with a steel kind of a shake look.
All right, Jim.
And be done with it.
Thanks a lot for your call. We've got an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, from Mary in Des Moines. She says, we replaced our driveway in September. It's on a 30-degree slope. As it began snowing in Des Moines a couple of weeks ago, we saw that the driveways of our neighbors remained snow-free until more snow had fallen. But our new drive was a snow magnet. It was snow-covered almost immediately and then became slick. We hadn't discussed surface texture with the contractor before he did the job. Have you heard of this? Is there anything to be done?
All I can think of is one's getting sun and one isn't. You know, that's kind of strange, I can't imagine why it, without heat, why it would melt under there other than the sun shining.
Well, it could
on
be
it.
What concrete versus asphalt or something like that. We don't have the details there.
Yeah. No, and you know, and that's what is sad is if you don't discuss it, especially on a real steep pitch, you'd want a very aggressive brushed or broomed finish on that so you can get some grip. And if it's new, do not use salt. You find other de-icers that are salt-free because you put salt on a driveway that's maybe even 2 years old, you're going to ruin it. It's gonna ruin the surface. You're just going to end up replacing the whole top of it or maybe the whole thing. It's the worst thing you do is use salt on brand-new concrete.
Does that change over time, or is salt going to damage any concrete?
Yeah, it gets better, but salt does ruin. I mean, it will, if it sits on it, it will ruin the concrete. Salt will. So stay, you know, find something that's got a salt free. And the Iowa Ready Mix Association, if you go to their website, you'll be able to either talk to someone and they'll recommend probably a product for you since it's new concrete. Because the last thing the Iowa Ready Mix Association wants is concrete going bad and people complaining about it. Iowans are so stuck on salt for some reason, rather than some other brine or something.
Okay.
I'm glad for that email. That's a good one. That's always been a bugaboo there.
All right.
Salt down.
Next, let's go to the phones. David is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually on a local city council, and I'm always looking for ways to try to promote energy efficiency. And I've talked to our building department about blower door testing, and there's been some pushback saying, well, we've read that promotes mold growth, even though it makes the house tighter. I was curious if you had an opinion about it.
Well, I got a real opinion on it, but I can't say it on the radio. Usually when people go against blower doors, there's some hidden agenda to me, I always have seen, because they don't want to find out that their doors don't meet energy code for one thing, that the leakier the house, obviously the less efficient it is. And the leakier that thing is, you have more indoor air quality issues, because when a house is done correctly, done a blower door test, you find out where the leaks are, and during that blower door test, they will also check all the ductwork to make sure the ductwork is sealed correctly and that it is designed correctly so that, let's say, every bedroom or every room is getting the right amount of air at the right temperature. So it's tested, and that the fans, like, say, bath ventilation fans, they will test those and make sure that they're putting out, like, 50 cubic feet per minute, as opposed to three, because some goofball went in the attic and stomped on their ductwork and didn't tell anybody and covered it up with insulation, which we see all the time. So it's a verifiable method of showing that the house was built to specifications. And when they, you know, the reason you have mold in there, you just come right back and say, well, yeah, we got mold because you didn't put ventilation in. You're required by ASHRAE to put, which is American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers, to have ventilation in a new home. I get involved in so many new homes that were put up because somebody wants to make some money fast on a house. You call it a house rather than a home because it's not really built to the correct standards, because they say, well, it costs too much. Well, then cut out the granite countertop,
yeah,
have a better house, you know. No, they should have a blower.
And that was one of my concerns, is we have a lot of new housing, and I always fear that this new housing is not of quality. And this was maybe a kind of a method I thought to help push better quality.
It is. And your biggest proponent, I mean, you to get some real backup here for you as a councilman, I would get David Ruffcorn from the Iowa Fire Marshal's office, and he's the energy efficiency guru for the state for codes. And you get Dave in your corner, and I've used him a lot. When you get Dave in your corner, or even say you're going to bring Dave, things kind of turn around a little bit. It's like saying, you know what, I'm going to call the Iowa Attorney General's office. Yeah, that's always been a good, you know, threat to somebody that's not doing something right. Get David in there and have him, you know, take a look at what's going on with the housing and make sure that's all up the Iowa Energy Conservation Code. And you just get a hold of him at Department of Public Safety.
All right.
Ruffcorn.
David, thank you so much for your call.
David.
David Ruffcorn is the recommendation.
Thank you. Starting to get wound up.
Yeah, you clearly are. We're going to take a break so you can do some deep breathing there, Bill.
Then
we'll answer some more questions here in a bit. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He's ready to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, let's go back to the phones. Ron is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I've got a three-bedroom, split-level house, gas, list there. Single zone heating. It's warm upstairs and cold downstairs. I've closed the upstairs vents to try to force more hot air downstairs. Replaced the furnace filter. Sometimes I run the fan all day to equalize temperatures, but it still doesn't help very much. Any suggestions?
Do you have a drive under garage on that?
It's an attached garage.
Okay. Was it built in the 70s over there in Waterloo? You know?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I've got some relatives that have a split level in that area. And what I noticed, and sometimes, you know, certain towns and areas all kind of build the same, is the windows, for one thing, if you had, you know, with a split level, the windows over there almost all had just fiberglass insulation around the windows. All that does is filter the air as it comes in from outside. I would go ahead and, you know, maybe pull the trim work off, seal around the windows. Also, is the ceiling finished off in the lower level?
Yes.
Okay. I really noticed too in that age of house, because I did the same thing back in the 70s. We seem to never insulate that rim joist, which is the area at the end of the floor joist where they meet the outside of the house. If there's a way, I know what some people have done is they've cut the drywall back all the way around the perimeter of the lower level, about 6 inches or 8 inches, so they can put some insulation, like foam insulation, sheets of foam insulation, and seal around them, like, say, put 4 inches of those in there to warm that up. Because what happened, and then they put like a piece of, build a little soffit or some, just put a piece of board on it, paint a different color, which is seeing Pinterest all the time. But anyway, what that does is that whole chamber, that floor, of the upper level and the ceiling and lower level, if it's leaky around the outside edges where the floor joists butt up against the outside, all the ductwork inside there then cool off. And it seems like we've insulated, we've done all this stuff, but we've missed that 1 foot area. And in many cases, that's enough to cool the air down on your ductwork, so where you don't get the warm air that you really want. We also did on that particular house, pulled the drywall off and had to insulate. It wasn't insulated correctly. And so that now the temperature in the lower and the upper level is the same. And all we did with the ductwork on the furnace was where we could is we sealed it with mastic. Every seam in the ductwork, we sealed it with mastic to help control the air. You're lucky in Waterloo. You've got some really good heating and cooling people over there. And they might, you know, if you get a hold of them, they might come out and then check the air coming out of each duct, and then they can adjust the dampers, or they maybe put in some mechanical dampers to maybe force a little bit more air to where you want it to go. And then that check that wall that's at the that attached garage. See if that, you know, you can go out to any basically big box store and buy these little temperature thermometers, you know, laser thermometers for about $20, $30, and then point that at the wall, and you can see the different difference in temperature, and you may, to really save some money, have to re-insulate that wall, and you could do it from the garage side. But mm-hmm. those are usually on those split levels. Those are the Bearcats. It just seems like the lower level was never designed right with ductwork. It's kind of like an ongoing theme. So I'd get a heating and cooling person over there first to really look at your system. And then maybe they can just adjust it out of it. But a lot of times it's those air leaks around the windows and the doors in that garage wall on those split levels.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call,
you bet.
Ron. 866-780-9100 is the number. Mary is up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mary.
Hi there.
Hi.
I got a question. I built a house 7 to 9 years ago. It's spray foam insulated. And when I first built it, for the first 6 or 7 years, especially during the winter time, there would be like a thundering thump, and somebody told me that the house was contracting. Jessam. Was contracting. I have noticed that it has.
I'm going to let Mary, I'll let Bill respond to that.
I heard cheddar in the background there,
that is,
didn't I,
that
Charity?
Was not
that
my dog. I'm not at home. But, Mary, that's exactly what Talk of Iowa would sound like if I did broadcast from home. So don't feel bad about it at all. Okay, Bill, so contracting and expanding.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because it's a common reoccurrence. Normally what that is you're hearing the trusses, the roof trusses move. It's called truss uplift. And it's not because of the spray foam insulation. It's just because of you probably have a ranch style home, I'm guessing, or a home that has roof trusses since it's fairly new. What happens, especially in Iowa, is the bottom of the truss, that it's called a cord. The bottom cord is the ceiling joist. That's where your ceiling is screwed into. That, since there's insulation in the attic, is warm. That piece of wood is basically the same temperature as what it is in your room. Now, the top cord is the part where the roof sheeting is attached to. That poor top cord is up there when it's really cold. And so when you get pieces of wood that are designed with all this bracing and angles in it, it's very rigid. And it's designed to be that way. But so then when the wood cold and the warm down below, you get some movement. It's called truss uplift. So the bottom cord in almost every house that's built with trusses will arch upwards. And in fact, in many cases, you'll see cracks in your drywall. If it isn't installed like the directions tell you to install it, you'll see cracks in the drywall where the wall drywall meets the ceiling drywall, where right against that little angle where the ceiling and the wall meet on the inside walls, not the outside walls, but the inside walls, and the center wall especially, because that truss goes up, the bottom cord goes up, and you'll hear it. And in many cases, there's other places in the house where the wood is moving, expanding, contracting, and yeah, it'll sound like a thunderclap on some homes. And some houses, it'll just be a tick, tick, tick noise because it's gently. But in some cases, it'll get enough tension, and then it'll just boom like that. And don't be worried about it. That's just what happens, when we're dealing in a cold climate.
And will it'll just stop
just go
over time?
Check for leaks. drywall leaks.
Will it stop after a while, or does that do that forever?
No, that's just the way it is. That's why we get frustrated when you order a truss package. The truss manufacturer gives you like three or four different pieces of paper, different colors. There's one that I can't remember if it's yellow or orange that tells you how to install the drywall correctly on the ceiling, because the trusses will go up and down, and you have to use a special L-shaped bracket for the bottom cord of the truss so it can go up and down. You can't try to hold it. Believe me, when I was young and really stupid, I tried that once, and the results were not pretty. So you have to allow that cord to go up and down, and like I say, the directions show you how to. So if you just have someone look up truss uplift, you'll see the bracket and how it's, you might be able to repair your drywall, if nothing else, if it is cracking, by looking at some of the recommendations.
All right.
But don't worry too much about the noise.
Mary, any other questions?
Okay. Yeah, this is a roundhouse and it doesn't have an attic.
Well, that would have been good before
Sorry. The
5 minutes I leaded on.
Blame the dog.
That's great.
I tried to, but you was just going on and you couldn't hear me something.
Oh, no, I was just going on. Yeah, I just, you know, that's just my voice keeps yapping. So so it's a roundhouse. Okay, well,
roundhouse,
then I would be a little bit nervous.
It doesn't have an attic on it. And it has,
okay,
the thundering in the last year or so has stopped. But I was calling, has this bothered the spray foam insulation?
Well, I would get with the spray foam manufacturer, because if he used closed cell foam in certain areas and the wood has moved, it can actually break the bond between the foam and the wood. And then if there's any place for air to get around, it can be trapped in areas where you could get moisture issues. And that's just, you know, that's just the way things happen. So yeah, since it's round, it can suffer different movements, because, you know, kind of like, you know, with those planetariums where they shoot out a telescope, you know, you're looking out one side, well, the other side of that circle, you can't see anything, but the other side may be always shady and the side you're looking at's always in the heat. So that can have an effect on a circle as well. So, get with the person that blew the foam in and say, hey, you know, maybe you might want to check it because my wood's maybe been moving too much. And they'll say, oh, don't worry about it. Well, if they say don't worry about it, then get somebody else or maybe get an engineer to take a look at it.
All right, Mary.
It's round. It's a whole different animal.
All right. Sorry about that, Mary. Good luck with that. And thanks so much for calling. John is on the line next from Davenport. Hi, John.
Hi there.
Hi, what's
thanks
your question?
Thanks for listening to me.
Hey, John, did you like my explanation in the last one there?
I did.
Thanks.
Yes.
Okay.
I've got a 1952 brick ranch. It's doesn't have drywall. It's got plasterboard and skim coated over it. I was remodeling, and I looked between that and the outside of the brick. There's no insulation on my walls. There's only a fiber board on the outside, and it's 6 inch deep. And all my walls on the perimeter are very cold. What kind of insulation can I get put inside that wall?
You can blow in.
Cellulose that's collects water, doesn't it? Doesn't some of them collect water and condense and fall down?
That's a really good question. You know, the old fuzz board that's probably on that house. We called it a lot of different things: asphalt impregnated sheeting. People used to frown on it, and we found out that really it's a pretty good product. It's vapor permeable, so vapor can go back and forth, and the wall can dry. So actually, your kind of wall with plaster, which is, they found out, probably the best thing to put on the inside too, you've got a very good wall there, which means that it's vapor permeable, which it has the capacity to dry. So your wall would probably have less of an issue of a lot of moisture inside the wall. The downside is we don't know how good of a job they did, of which they probably didn't, of wrapping the outside of that fuzz board. So it's probably just brick, an inch space, and then fuzz board. And so if down in the bottom of your brick walls there's those little weeps They have to be cleaned out. The first thing you want to do is make sure that when water gets driven past the brick and it condenses and comes down the brick, it can get out at the bottom. So in some cases, you might want to get a mason to take a look at that. You can also go to buildingscience.com, and they've been doing a ton of studies on your type of wall and what the best product is to put in it. So if you go to buildingscience.com and then just do brick veneer masonry wall, and you'll find some information. It might take you a little bit of time, but that's kind of the go-to source for your type of walls, which, you know, a lot of us would love to have that kind of wall, because it's kind of become, only with new products, it's become kind of that is the wall if you're going to have a wall other than having insulation all on the outside of the studs. It's a good wall. It really is. It's
right,
better than
right.
most of the new homes. Yeah. So go to buildingscience.com. Yep.
John, thanks so much for your call. Let's try to squeeze in a couple email questions here. Susan says,
okay.
We have a couple of mini splits on a small guest house, and the compressor on the platform outside keeps getting iced over. We contacted the installer, and they said it would go through a defrost cycle. Do you have any experience with this?
They need to get back and take care of it, because it's supposed to go through some sort of a defrost, but there must be something going on, whether the placement of where the unit is, maybe it's getting windblown snow or something, or ice, or I don't know. But I would have the installer come back and take a look at it. And you may want to take some pictures of it. And you could keep those, show them to the contractor that you've documented it. And if not, you can go to the manufacturer and say, hey, I'm having issues with this. And this isn't right. And usually the manufacturer will send somebody as well.
All right. And you've got
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
One more question. You've got just over a minute on this one, Bill. Andy in Iowa City says, I have cold air coming through the gas fireplace. How can I stop that?
I'd get rid of the gas fireplace myself. I don't like them at all, because you may have the gas fireplace. I can't see it, but a lot of gas fireplaces have one duct that's double lined. One will take the exhaust out, one will pour fresh air in. So you may be pulling fresh air in because of somebody turns a fan on, or the wind is from that direction blowing cold air in. But I just don't like them, because I don't like having an open burning gas fire in my house.
I suspect that is exactly the answer that Andy did not want to hear.
Sorry. but he shouldn't have called me. but get with the manufacturer on that one. But no, I just get rid of it. You know, if they take a picture of it, you have it blown up and put that where the fireplace is, and there you go.
Classy. Yeah, no,
also,
that's
Netflix
nice.
Netflix has a fireplace picture. You can turn that on all the time.
All right. Bill McAnally, thank you so much for being here. I hope you have a New Year's resolution to be more careful on ladders in 2021.
Yes, I will. Just as careful as Dennis is walking on ice. You betcha.
All right. Well, take care, Bill. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. He'll be back again in a month or so to answer your questions about the home improvement projects in your life. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, Matt Alvarez, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And please subscribe to our podcast. Anywhere you get your podcast, just search for Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.